And you're listening to Unusual Sources here on 93.3 CFMU FM. That was Billy Bragg, Upfield. Maybe you'll hear a little more of that later. But today here we have a special program. We've brought in Henry Evans Tenbrink, who is a well-known activist here in Hamilton in the larger area. Henry has been involved in so many causes, we wouldn't be able to list them here. He's done a lot of work on Palestine as a solidarity activist. He's been to Palestine, in fact, he can tell you all about that. And he's done a lot of work back coming in Canada to raise awareness about the occupation. But like our co-host Doug Brown, Henry is also a longtime member of the NDP and the trade union movement, has been at many pickets and rallies to defend labor rights and to protect things like our postal service, having been a lead campaigner for that in Canada. So what we wanted to do today is there's an upcoming convention with the NDP. It's an important convention. It helps to set the direction of that party. And this comes at a time when social democratic forces are in resurgence in some parts of the world, when people are starting to talk again about having a left, an organized left. And in Canada, we don't have much of that, of course. There's a lot of work to be done. And there's a lot of grassroots activists on the ground that are propelling things forward. So Doug Brown, of course, he's not just our co-host, but he's heavily involved in all sorts of issues here in transit, in Burlington, in Hamilton, in the NDP, and in many anti-war causes and nuclear disarmament. So Doug and Henry have a lot of experience in the same kind of issues that concern this program and our audience and this community. Some of us are going to be at this convention, and there's been a lot of preparation underway. I better hand things over to Doug because there's been a lot of talk and work on this issue. So, Doug, I'll let you bring in our program today with Henry.
Okay, great. Well, thanks, Brendan, and welcome, Henry. It's really great for you to have you here. The world's in a precarious state. I mean, the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientist just moved half a minute closer to midnight. Tensions are rising. There's this open threat of war and genocide against North Korea. The continued Russophobic attacks on anything and everything that Russia could or would or isn't involved in. And, so this is a time really for progressive voices within the NDP to be heard and take a firm stand for peace and justice. And I think perhaps the NDP would say, well, we're for peace and justice, but when you go issue by issue, we're not. There's very significant exceptions to this. And Henry, you and I were in Edmonton at the last policy conference.
Yes, we were. Yeah.
And we attended. We tried to get resolutions on the floor, and it was a very. I found it a very frustrating exercise. Tell me what your take was of what occurred in Edmonton.
Well, thank you for having me here, Doug and Brendan. And yes, it was extremely frustrating. As you mentioned, Doug, we did try to bring resolutions to the floor. One of the resolutions I had put forward was actually introduced as number 52. And we did manage to get it moved up to number 9, but even so, it didn't get on the floor. And issues like and something that happened 100 years ago made it, in the top three, that has absolutely no significance today other than, the people did deserve an apology for what happened. But, I mean, still, there are issues that are so important today that were ignored. As you're aware, 84% of the NDP grassroots and 63% of Canadians as a whole support Palestine in their fight for justice and to end the occupation. And yet, it seemed that the leadership in the NDP in Edmonton did everything they could to avoid having that come to the floor.
Right. And, you know, I recollect that I believe you were the first one. You got there early for the prioritization of resolutions on foreign affairs.
That's
and,
right.
And I know you got to the mic first, and you made a plea to move up your resolution. I would say our resolution, because there are a number of writings had sent similar resolution in you know, for justice for Palestinians and to have a policy supporting BDS and other peaceful means of putting pressure.
And when you say my resolution, Doug, it was actually, I put the resolution forward, but it was a resolution that was endorsed unanimously by the Hamilton Mountain NDP riding.
Yeah, and also in Burlington and a few other riding associations that also endorsed it. So, you know, you did you on the ground. You were fantastic. Got to the mic first, so they couldn't block you. But I got to the mic. I think I was fifth in line. I never made it because they stalled, and they, you know, and brought in extraneous arguments and other issues. And you know, before we knew it, it was over. And really, nothing significant had happened because of this this strange debate that was going on. You know, like whether the resolution on Palestine should be put behind certain other resolutions, and so on and so on.
Well, if you recall, Doug, even when it, you know, our resolution was about to come to the floor, and a fellow stood up and started speaking on issues that had nothing to do with what was being discussed, totally skewed the direction of discussion, and so ensured that the resolution never did get to the floor.
Yeah.
Wait, so if I understand what's happening here, you came very prepared to engage in discussion at this previous convention about Palestine and the occupation and the NDP's approach towards that issue, and it looks like you're dealing with stalling tactics being employed. They don't want to confront these issues.
Yeah, exactly. In fact, it wasn't just the resolution on Palestine. Several riding associations had put in resolutions to have the party oppose the arms sale to Canadian arms sale to Saudi Arabia. And they ranked that like rock bottom.
Yeah.
So there were a lot of good resolutions that were ranked very low, and yet we had like a resolution for the NDP to take a stand against torture. Well, I thought, you know, that's like motherhood. We don't need to spend time debating whether torture is good or not. Everybody is against torture. But it was a stalling tactic so that more substantive issues wouldn't come to the floor.
So this ranking system, it sort of determined what would even make it to the floor and be discussed in the first place. So a lot of the things you wanted to talk about just were put right at the bottom so we could never get to it.
Yeah, there were 54 resolutions, and we knew that probably only four or five would ever reach the floor just because so little time is allotted. I did have a discussion much later with somebody that was on the resolutions committee, and I was told, well, our criteria was that they not be controversial, and I said, well, it's the controversial ones that need debate.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, well, and you know, for example, you know, and I mentioned that one of the resolutions that came up was from over 100 years ago where, and don't get me wrong, this is an important issue, and I think the community did deserve an apology for it, and that it should have been addressed, but not at the expense of issues that are taking place today. And that issue was a ship that was turned away with passenger list.
Cameroon.
Yeah, yeah. Of Sikh immigrants.
Yeah.
And, you know, they suffered greatly because of that decision. And so it was a wrong decision for the government to make at the time. But still, you know, that was 100 years ago. And we were dealing with issues that are taking place today. You know, people are dying. People are being wrongly incarcerated. And it needs to be dealt with. You know, the resolutions that are being put forward by the UN are being ignored. And yet... one of the criteria, you know, with the Americans going into Iraq, for example, was that Iraq was ignoring two UN resolutions, and whereas Israel is ignoring hundreds of resolutions dealing with Palestine.
Yeah. So, you know, the experience of a couple of years ago, the Edmonton Convention was quite, we didn't really deal with anything substantive on foreign affairs. In fact, you know, to see another hot issue, it should have been a hot issue for that convention, the arms sale to Saudi Arabia being ranked so lowly, at least Stephen Lewis, who is one of the keynote speakers, covered it a bit, you know, expressed some dismay that it would not get discussed. So I think we have a long way to go for the NDP. We're, in serious need of you know, developing good and fair foreign policies that the party should be putting forth.
I agree. And, you know, I think part of the problem, Doug, is that the Canadian government, and that's, you know, all three parties are guilty of this, is they're afraid to anger the Americans, you know, to the south of us by going against their policy. And a good example, you know, of what's happening there was in last night's State of the Union speech, where Trump came right out and said that they want to deal with countries that voted against their policies. So any country that doesn't support American policy is declared an enemy of the Americans, and you know.
Yeah, well, see, this is exactly what we need to confront, and this is exactly what we need the NDP for. We need a third party because you have a situation right now under the Trudeau government where you have Trudeau and Chrystia Freeland, and they'll say, we oppose Trump. Oh, you know, we're against that bully and that barbarian, you know, to the south, and they'll make a big show about how progressive they are, but Trump's foreign policy is our foreign policy. If Trump says we're going to go after Korea, Canada's foreign policy is we're going to go after Korea. If Trump says let's put more soldiers on the border with Russia, then, yeah, that's going to be Canada's policy too. And although both Freeland and Trudeau have made statements about how they're paving the way for multicultural, global, whatever, and liberalism and so on, it is Trump's foreign policy that they are executing. And we know that the liberals are going to do that. We know that the conservatives are going to do that. What about the NDP? Can the NDP present some kind of alternative policy? And it's a critical question because, of course, the NDP used to have it in their policy that things like get out of NATO, Canada should not be part of NATO. And that was reflecting the powerful peace movement of the 1960s, 70s, 80s. And, you know, it became a part of that manifesto. And there's been a move away from these kind of things, which means they're moving away from the things that differentiate themselves as a party from the other two parties.
Exactly. And part of the problem there, too, is you know, we've seen the NDP evolve to a position where at one time it was our policy to get out of NATO, to get out of NORAD. And those policies have been removed without input by the grassroots. And you know, the feeling with the majority of I'm sure Canadians and the NDP is that we should pull out of NATO and NORAD. Part of the problem also is that people are misinformed about the role of NATO as opposed to the role of Canadian forces in UN peacekeeping. And I saw this at a CUPE convention where a resolution came to the floor to get out of NATO, and people came up and said, well, Canada, NATO is part of the peacekeeping forces. They enforce peacekeeping, which is not true. NATO is part of the American enforcement of American policy.
Well, yeah,
and that's all they do.
That's the only reason why it exists now. I mean, allegedly it was... formed to counter the Soviet Union. It formed before the Warsaw Pact, and it existed in order to protect Western Europe from Soviet invasion. Well, the Soviet Union dissolved in 1992, but NATO did not, and has in fact expanded, just as the U.S. has not left South Korea, it's not left Germany, it's not left those Pacific Islands. It stays put on its web of military bases, and NATO stays put and expands. And right now, NATO is looking for a reason to exist, and it's found one with Russia, and so it's pushing towards greater confrontation and greater escalation of the situation, rearmament, arms buildup, and so on and so forth. You know, is this the kind of policy Canadians want and that we want to get into, and, you know, that the NDP represents?
Exactly, Brendan. And you know, in addition, when you mentioned that the Soviet Union dissolved, I mean, when it dissolved, part of that was NATO and the Americans promised that they would not move into previous Warsaw Pact countries, and now we're seeing American bases formed. They pretty well got Russia and China surrounded with American bases now, and so, you know, given the history of Russia, they lost over 20 million people during the war. They were the country that suffered the most, actually, as a result of the Second World War, and they made a promise to themselves that would never be allowed to happen again. And so now, you know, American military policy is they're moving into these Warsaw Pact countries, and Canada is complicit. They've got a base in Latvia now. I think it's about 400 troops, and they're supposed to be a wall to prevent Russian invasion, Russia has been a relatively peaceful country. They've not invaded other countries. They don't have bases set up all over the globe, and yet the Americans declared them as an enemy. And the only reason they declared them as an enemy is to justify their arms buildup, as you said. The industrial military complex needs a reason to produce weapons, and this is their excuse. They've declared Russia an enemy. North Korea, which is never invaded another country, has been declared an enemy, the only reason they have their nuclear arms is to deter the Americans from doing to them what they did to Libya and to Syria and to Iraq. And the propaganda has people believing that these countries are a threat, when in actuality, they've never been a threat.
And, you know, there's, I think, an image of NATO that, you know, Canada joins with a lot of other countries in this collective exercise, but NATO doesn't vote on things. It's a consensus, and the U.S. forms that consensus. I cannot think of a significant issue where NATO has ever gone away from U.S. foreign policy objectives. And so if we want an independent foreign policy, Canada really has to get out of NATO. And that would be a breathtaking step, because no country has ever left NATO, which I think says something about the structure of NATO as well. But through NATO, we've had to, we bombed Libya, a country we have no dispute with at all, and we bombed Yugoslavia. We should be independent, like the Irish model, you know, the independent foreign policy, do what's right, and don't be bossed around by the U.S.
Mm-hmm. And we see in Syria, for example, where American policy failed. They attempted to get rid of Assad, the Assad government, and they demonized the Assad government with propaganda. That's not true. A good friend of ours, Eva Bartlett, was in Syria and reported back as an independent journalist and proved that the propaganda that was being fed to us by the Americans and by our own Canadian government was not true. And recently she was also in North Korea. From her reports, the things we're hearing about North Korea are absolutely on the whole false. I believe she met with two American soldiers who said that, they were there to recover bodies from the Korean War, and they said that everything they heard about Korea has turned out not to be true.
Yeah. Well, you've got a situation where, a handful of people can shine a light on a situation better than, much of the established left or, whatever. So it kind of hints at a larger problem here that we're getting at, in that there is considerable dissent or dissension in the ranks, I guess you might say, about a lot of the policies Canada's pursuing and about the direction we're going in. At the same time, there's growing strength of certain movements, such as the Palestine movement, for example, which has been growing within the NDP's base itself. When is the party going to represent these frustrations and also these new growing movements? They seem to be hiding from it as a strategy, which is not a strategy. And I know you want to talk about Palestine and some of these other movements and things that are going on in the ranks. So I'll let Doug talk about that.
Well, okay. So in just a couple of weeks, we have the convention in Ottawa, NDP policy convention. Henry and I are going. Yeah, a number of people from local riding associations are going. We've had discussions. I know Hamilton Mountain, and you had a big role in this, Henry, amazingly good resolutions on a number of foreign policy issues, including Palestine. Same in Burlington, we got some good resolutions. I think most of them are pretty well identical to the ones passed in Hamilton Mountain. So here's an opportunity to see if we can start a process of changing NDP policy on Palestine. We've had discussions about Palestine with their representative in Canada, in fact. One thing that should pass definitely is support having Palestinians full ambassador status within Canada, because that discussions, that allows the more fulsome discussions to start. But the rest of it is on the table too. Mm-hmm. BDS. I mean, we've got this is a growing campaign. 18 months ago, the Green Party, they didn't call it BDS, but it is BDS without the name. A recent poll shows how many Canadians of all parties support Palestinian rights. So, mm-hmm. I think the NDP has to start changing their policies. This thing that we've had the last election, where I think there was at least 8 candidates were disqualified from running because they had dared criticize Israel at some point in the past. And people like Paul Manley, would be an outstanding candidate. And my goodness, I mean, he was criticizing Israel because at the time Israel had locked up his father, who was part of the boat to Gaza. Totally unreasonable. So I'm hoping that Henry and our other activists can have a bigger impact this year in Ottawa.
Well, you're familiar with the numbers and the figures. I mean, you probably know them better than I do about the percentage of the NDP's membership and of trade union membership that supports Palestinian rights, to have one state, two state solutions, to do something about the occupation. There's when you talk about the Labour base or the NDP base, it's different than it was 20 or 30 years ago in terms of its opinions. In Europe right now, you have two kinds of social democratic parties. You have social democratic parties that are dying, that are shrinking, and you have social democratic parties that are growing. And the ones that are growing, it's because the leadership is starting to reflect the base. Mm-hmm. Corbyn in the UK and a small number of other, it's a situation, because right now there's a huge divide between the base, the membership, and leadership that seems decades out of touch on all the key issues.
Yeah, and another thing is, you know, there's been some disturbing unanimous votes of our NDP MPs. A year and a half ago, they unanimously voted to have the documentary on the so-called White Helmets get the Nobel Peace Prize. Outrageous. And it was passed unanimously, yeah. not a single dissenter. So we don't even, we used to have, you know, people like Sven Robinson, Libby Davies, Les Benjamin, that would stand up for the right thing. Mm-hmm. And to see, you know, the much larger caucus now not have a single dissenting vote, I find that discouraging, whether that emanates from the leader, that they no dissent is permitted, but that's still a bad sign for the party.
And I'm glad you mentioned Sven Robinson, Doug. Sven was a strong supporter of the issue, and he actually nominated my group for the Nobel Peace Prize when we were in Palestine.
Oh.
So I was always proud of that fact. I mean, but, you know, the important thing about BDS, too, which was mentioned, is, you know, and BDS, by the way, is Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions. It's a peaceful movement. It's a nonviolent movement. I mean, and so I just can't understand why there's such a hue and cry against a movement. I mean, there are so many other, you know, like Black Lives Matter and all these other groups that protest with the support of the Canadian government. And part of the problem, too, when we talk about governments, it seems to me that the norm now is it's acceptable for politicians to lie. We see it south of the border. We see it within our own government. Trudeau promised to deal with Bill C-51, and they've actually made it worse with their Bill C-59, with as you mentioned, the postal issue, which I was very involved with. Trudeau, part of his campaign promise was to restore door-to-door delivery. He lied about that. And so many other issues they lied about. And Canadians seem to be, you know, there's no reaction.
There's a lot of people checking out of the process, getting depressed, because they know, like you do, that it's a very corrupt situation and you can't rely on these people. It's understood widely that you can't trust a politician to keep their word after the election, that there's one campaign for the election and then they do something completely different. And that's an opening for a party like the NDP. Because if you look at the NDP's history, back when it was the CCF, they had leaders that were solid people in some regards. Some of them were from labor and from the trade union struggle. They were from social justice and social gospel. There were, you know, people in there that you could count on that they were going to try to pursue the vision that they were talking about before the election. You know, they're also known for, sort of a tight-fisted economic management, in the sense that they weren't going to spend like crazy, that you could rely on them to try to handle the budget. So what I'm saying is, if the NDP were to put forward some really solid people with a history in the struggle, people that you know you can count on their word, that could really start to differentiate themselves from a really muddled group of politicians that we have on the scene right now.
Yeah, for sure. And, I think what we should be encouraging, too, is there's going to be a federal election in a year and a half. And, I think it's an opportunity for people in the peace and social justice movements to get more involved in the electoral process and actually run for office. We need another Sven Robinson in there. We need another Levy Davies. We need a Jeremy Corbyn. You know, people that will really stand on principle. Anyways, I'm feeling excited about going to Ottawa in less than 2 weeks now. Henry, you're going, and we have some of our compatriots in our respective riding association. Mm-hmm. It should be a good convention. Let's hope that they open the door for us in terms of our resolutions.
Oh, you can count on the fact that we'll be heard.
I know we will. So, Henry, thanks for your long-time continuing efforts on everything to do with peace and social justice within the NDP and outside of it. And thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Well, it's great to have people in the studio, especially people that are off to do something interesting, trying to help put the NDP on the right footing for the challenges that we face ahead. And let me tell you, they are significant challenges. So we're going to take a short break. We'll let you hear more of that Billy Bragg tune, and then we'll be back.